Ever feel like your energy, focus, and recovery could use some extra support? Quicksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly without any added fillers. When I was in the middle of what seemed to be a personal health crisis, Quicksilver Scientific was one of the brands I could always trust to get an effective, high-quality product. I remember using some of their liposomal nutrients and detoxification supplements. Every formula is designed with advanced liposomal delivery that wraps nutrients in tiny spheres your body recognizes, helping them absorb quickly so you get more from every dose. They have clean formulations, non-GMO, no unnecessary fillers, and they're allergen tested. Quicksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/mindfulmovement. That's tryqs.com/mindfulmovement. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
We need to give our kids a chance to do the things that they can do, because things like making their lunch, unpacking their backpack, doing their own laundry are things that actually build confidence and self-esteem. If we just cater and cater and cater and give and give and give, we're actually robbing our kids the opportunity to build that capability and that confidence and that self-esteem. So I think those are things to focus on, like in the daily. Don't do things for your kids that they can do or almost do. Really look at what you're doing for them. You're going to have a whole long list and be like, oh, shoot, I do that, I do that, I do that, I do that, because it's easier and it's faster and it's cleaner and it's this and it's that. But give your kids those opportunities. And then as a bigger picture, really ask yourself, am I putting a lot of pressure on my kids to accomplish, or am I supporting them?
Tia Slidham, thank you for joining me on the Mindful Movement Podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So you're a parenting coach?
I'm a parenting coach.
I assume you had parents?
I have parents.
Nicely. Well played.
I have kids.
How many kids you have?
Two boys, 14 and 16, who are now 6 feet tall with like 13 shoes and can pick me up. So it's a good thing I have some parenting skills, or I don't know how I would get them to do anything.
Do you feel like you're a natural, or did your kids have to teach you that you suck at parenting and then you figured out how to be good at it?
You know, I never like to say that anybody's a natural, but sometimes some of us have a few more natural tendencies than others. But parenting really is a learned skill. And some of us learn that through our own childhood and our own experiences and are able to actually come to a place where we find that kind of peace and joy. And others really need support and guidance to learn the skills. No right or wrong way to do it. I have, you know, fortunately not been one who really struggled with my kids, but I've also been studying this, working in this field and industry for well over 20 years. So my kids sort of came into this environment and I was already more or less prepared.
Gotcha. It's interesting you say no right or wrong. I mean, one thing that I've noticed over the years, I have two kids, they're 19 and 21, is you notice that parents go about it very differently. There's just a vast spectrum of possibility of how you could deploy whatever set of parenting skills you have towards your offspring. It's funny, for so much of my parenting, I felt like it was so important to be good at parenting, yet I felt like I screwed up so many times just over and over and over. And then I always wonder and question, like, did I do a good enough job? And it probably, you know, is my insecurities just rattling around in my mind. And then and now my kids are 19 and 21 and I see them and I'm kind of impressed by them. And I have to remind myself, like, hey, man, maybe you didn't do such a bad job.
No, you didn't. And I like to say to parents, you know, to remind yourself that parenting's not intuitive. It's a learned skill. So if you feel like you're failing, you feel like you're messing up, to really ask yourself, have I taken the time to learn everything I can learn about this? And if not, there are resources out there. We often get caught in that cycle of, you know, we parent in one way, we don't feel great about it, we doubt ourselves, we say we're not going to do it again, and then we repeat the same things over and over. And that's where we really want to say, okay, we need to do something different. It's not our kids' responsibility, it's ours. We're all going to make mistakes from time to time. But if we're not changing and learning from those mistakes and the same cycles are repeating, that's where we want to focus.
What do you find to be some of the more common mistakes that the average parent, slips into?
Mm-hmm. One of the most common ones is that we tend to use our intuition to try and stop behaviors because we haven't learned the skills. And that intuition is most of the time a form of punishment. So we get caught using tactics like yelling, reminding, empty threats. If you don't do this, you're not going to do this. If you don't knock it off, you're not going to have that. We take things away. We overpower our kids with bribery or rewards, or we're engaging in these power struggles. All of those tactics are so common, and most of your listeners right now are going to be like, yep, check, 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 because that's just what comes to mind when we're trying to get our kids to listen and cooperate and do the right thing. And unfortunately, when we're using those tactics, they are all classified as punishment. And what that means is those tactics are focusing on your child as a person rather than focusing on helping those behaviors improve next time. So that's where our kids feel some form of blame or shame or pain. They start feeling bad about themselves. They can't do anything right. They're always in trouble. And what we want to do is learn to discipline, which simply means teaching and training, in which case you're focusing on the behaviors and teaching your kids the skills to make a better choice, do the right thing, you know, improve that situation next time.
Gotcha. I also, over my years of parenting, I felt conflicted a lot about the discipline side of things. Like, I had to remind myself that you don't own your kids. Yep. They're not really yours. Yep. Like, you bring them in, but they are their own people. And it's easy. I do see a lot of parents imposing a lot of what they think their kids should do, because it's what they want them to do. But it's like, that's a different person that on some level has to learn some things about who they are and how they want to be, and reconcile, like balancing between like keeping them safe and out of like big mistakes and just creating a little version of you through control or whatever. Like, that's a, could be a fine line. And maybe there's not a right answer how to do that. You know, there's just different perspectives.
Well, I think if you're feeling like you are overpowering your kids all the time, you're trying to force them to listen, force them to do their homework, force them to do the sports you want them to do, force them to engage in certain clubs, like everything feels like a force, we're really robbing our kids of the opportunity to, one, have a voice, and two, to feel like we're actually there to support them in what you're saying, which is help them learn who they are so they can feel good about their life and their decisions and their choices. If we're always forcing them and it's always our way, our kids are going to feel very squashed and not feel like they're ever really independent and confident and able to manage what life throws them. So I think the most important thing is that we do need to guide. We do need to give some input and opinions and have conversations for sure. Like, we are the adult. We do need to be that guide, teacher, and leader. But if you're overpowering them, that's where I always say to parents, put yourself in their shoes and envision that, you know, that you are your partner and your partner's treating you that way. And if every second it's like, do this, put this away. Why'd you do that? Why aren't you, what do you mean you're interested in that? You're going to go play Mahjong? Well, why are you playing Mahjong? If everybody's just questioning us all the time, you're going to get to a place where you're like, leave me alone. And that's where we see the parent-child relationship really start to weaken. We see more acting out, listening less, kids rebelling, looking to peers for that guidance. And that's where we lose sort of more control, which ultimately the parent was trying to get in the first place.
Right. Well, and part of it, I think, as a parent is you have to give up some of that control.
Sure.
But what, because I feel like parenting is just a long spectrum where every year they get older, you're just giving up more control. It's a lot of like working on yourself to let go. But let's say, you know, a kid is young and you are trying to inspire, let's say, discipline. I mean, I'll use an example of, let's say, keep it like cleaning your room or something. And, you know, I remember a time where I would ask my kid to clean your room and he said he would do it. And I come in an hour later and it's not. And I'd be like, why didn't you clean your room? I asked you to clean your room an hour ago. And ultimately, what my goal is to inspire him to want a clean room or whatever. But I failed miserably at conveying that. Like, in a scenario like that, that many parents could probably connect with or some version of that, what is a better strategy?
Yeah. So a couple things. One, in terms of room cleaning as just like a general rule of thumb, because a lot of parents struggle with this, is we have to think about the fact that we all live in one house, but we all should have some of our own spaces, like our own area and our own space. And I think giving your kids some autonomy in their room can be one of those places. So my school of thought on room cleaning is really let them live how they want to live, but set the boundaries around what you're okay with. So I'll do laundry that's in the hamper. Laundry on the floor, not my responsibility. So if your uniforms and your things are in there on the floor that you need, then you can either wash them or wear them dirty. So like setting boundaries around what you're okay with so you're not cleaning up after them and feeling like it's chaos. And then really setting really like a family household, hey, on the every Sunday we all spend 1 hour tidying up our own spaces, or every last Sunday of the month we have like an overhaul. We also don't allow food in our room so that there's not animals and things like that. So you can set some boundaries around it, but while still giving some autonomy. So that's some, you know, food for thought around room cleaning. But what really you're talking about is telling your kids and asking your kids to do something and then not having them listen and follow through with that action and then feeling like, now what? Now what am I going to do? Am I going to remind them again? Am I going to take something away? Am I going to be frustrated and mad? We fall into those punishment cycles. So what we want to do instead of saying boundaries, which is clean your room, let's clean our room, please. It's time to clean our room, please. And we say it over and over and we say what our boundary is, thinking that because we're the adult and they're the child, they should just do it because they live in our house and we said so, which is where a lot of the cycles happen. We instead want to set boundaries. And in order to set boundaries, you follow three steps. So you need to first identify what your boundaries are. So like we said, we clean our room on this day at this time. This is what needs to happen. This is what it looks like. We want to teach, train, and practice our boundaries as step two. So really going through the timeline, how long they have to clean their room, what needs to be done, what are the things you're looking for? And then the third step, what's the consequence for not doing or doing the set boundary. So in that case, it might be when you choose not to clean your room, you're telling me you're having a hard time managing the things that need to be done. So we're going to take a break tomorrow or the next day or whatever it is from the thing that you desire, maybe cell phone or video game or whatever it is that they desire. But most of the time, what we do is you didn't clean your room. That's it. No TV. And then we interject a punishment in the moment. Whereas if you set it up in advance, your kids know, hey, when I clean my room and I take responsibility on these times in this way, I can then have X, Y, or Z, which I love. So we're teaching them real life. We go to work, we earn money, we can do the things we want. We don't go to work, we don't earn money, we can't do the things we want. Really, it's the idea that the responsibilities need to be done in order to have the desirables act.
Gotcha. What about as it pertains to social media, Tia? I mean, I know that there are a lot of young people on social media, and when you're young, you can't conceptualize how you'll feel about your decisions today down the road. When I see, like, let's say you have a child that is putting themselves out there in social media, and they're at the age that you've come to grips with, they have access. How do you approach, I guess, inspiring your kid to have a sense of like what you consider reasonable values around what they put out there of themselves?
Yeah, I think so much of that comes back to your connection and bond and relationship with your kids. I think all kids are going to test the limits. They're born, you know, they have two predetermined jobs when kids are born, and one is to please you, which is great. But the second is to push boundaries until boundaries are found. So kids are going to push the limits, test the cause and effect, see what happens when. That's all normal and developmentally appropriate. But I think a sense of value and self-worth, that really stems from your relationship with your parents. Those are the people that mean the most to your kids, even if they act like you don't. It really is important to them. And the relationship that you have, so you can have those conversations with your kids. If you're living in a constant cycle of negativity and punishment, your kids are going to rebel. They're going to look for attention in other places. They're not going to come to you for support. They're going to hide things, lie, sneak, do all of those. So really, when it comes to it, and you know, I gave my boys their cell phones when they were going into middle school. So it was grade 7 for them. And I wish they didn't have phones too. Like I was talking to a client this morning about this. We live in a world now where they're going to have devices all the time. They're taking notes at school on computers or using Google Docs and Google Drives, things we never even had. And we have to get used to our world with it. So how do we help our kids navigate that in the safest way, healthiest way? Role modeling and making sure we have a great relationship with them.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, you just touched on something that I think underlies a lot that is really important and I think hard for parents to navigate. Let's say your child does have maybe a sense, either like, I don't want to say a low sense of self-worth, but they might not necessarily really be aware of the connection of how they feel about themselves and their behaviors and actions. And let's say a child is, maybe it is because of a lack of self-worth or something, and you might have a good connection with them, but they don't draw that connection and they do tend to put things on social media that they might one day regret. How do you approach that?
Yeah, it's again a boundary issue. So a lot of times parents will say, well, my kids are having trouble with their cell phone, and we'll talk about that exact example, but my kids are having trouble with their cell phone and video games, and they won't do their homework, and they won't clean their room, and they won't, you know, get ready in the morning, and they feel like they have this whole slew of issues. It actually comes back to a few core things that need to be done, and one of them is boundaries. And so a lot of times we're very gray in our boundaries, meaning sometimes you let them post things and you don't check and you're like, whatever. Other times you're mad about it. Other times you take their phone away and you're very gray. We want to get what I call 3 C's: concrete, clear, and consistent in everything we do from morning to night with our kids and their boundaries. So in that scenario, I would be setting up a system, and I have done this with my teens, where we do a random safety check. Now, as they get older and you build the trust, you realize you don't need to do so many of these things. But if they're new and they're, you know, excited about things and they're being influenced, it's important to do a random safety check and make sure and let them know, I'm not here to invade your privacy. I'm worried about other people out in the world and I want to make sure you're making safe choices. Things that go out on the internet and in social media can be things that affect a job interview later. I think it's important to have conversations because kids won't see 10 years down the line. They only see today, right now, what's important to them. And so I think having boundaries around when you check the phone, how you can check the phone, making sure you have those random safety checks, making sure you have the discussion with your kids on what's appropriate, not appropriate.
Sorry to cut you off there. Like, what if they don't agree with you? Like, what if they say something like, well, why would I want to work for a company that's going to choose whether they hire me based on some post I did when I was a kid?
Yeah. So I would set the boundary of, you know, either. I love either or language. Either we come to some terms with some boundaries that make sense for us as parents and what we think is safe, and I'm happy for you to use the phone, or we can pause on the phone until you feel you're ready to do so. So we do have to set boundaries. A lot of times people think discipline and they're like, oh, positive discipline. It's gentle parenting. Your kids can just do whatever they feel, when they feel it, when they want it. That is not true. There's so many misconceptions on what gentle parenting really is. Kids need boundaries. And sometimes you have to hold a concrete, clear, consistent boundary that they may not like for their safety and for long-term health.
What about when I have a ton of what about questions. What about when someone to you, like, let's say your kid, like I remember as a kid, I was labeled in school as a kid that I guess would have, I don't know, poor behavior, to say it simply. Like, I would get in trouble. And there were things that I felt like I needed at those times that I probably didn't get. Like, what about for a kid that, like, I know, like, for the school system, for instance, there's a lot of kids, I think, especially young boys, that it's very, like, square peg, round hole, like, not a good fit. the school systems these days. When it's not a good fit, like they're not, you know, they're not going to necessarily thrive in it. They're going to look for other things to do or whatever. They're going to do what they want to do. Let's say a kid is having a, like behavior issues, or there's an event or something. Like, how do you help parents approach, especially in that acute situation, like a kid gets in trouble? How do you approach the kid, parent to kid, in that scenario?
Yeah, a lot of times this comes up a lot where parents, kids are having trouble at school, and then parents think they should, you know, consequence their kids at home for what's happening at school and vice versa. And that creates a worse situation for everybody. So we want to try and support the teacher from home, but we aren't going to consequence at home for what happens at school unless we have a very clear system set up that we've talked about parent to child, and we know that it's really going to be an effective way of doing that. What happens most of the time is parents and teachers don't know why the behavior is happening. So most of the time, if a child is acting out at school, I can almost guarantee it they're acting out at home. Almost guaranteed they're having trouble at home if they're acting out in school and in public. Sometimes kids will act out at home, but be amazing out in public. That will happen for a certain period of time if the parents don't switch what's going on at home. At some point, you start to see kids acting out in public as well. They can only keep that going on for so long. So I want you to think about understanding why a behavior is happening. Most of the time, we are not learning the skills to know why. Every behavior has a purpose, a goal, a reason. It's not to annoy the teacher, the parent. There is a reason for it. And we're usually just punishing our kids for the behavior instead of really understanding why that's going on. Most of the time we see unwanted behaviors, it is a direct reflection of the parenting that's happening. Our kids are feeling overpowered. They don't have a sense of voice. We're punishing all the time. We're constantly battling. We're in a negative cycle. And our kids feel like they're stuck, like they don't have a way out. We're actually watching with our teenage boys over the past couple nights in the evenings, the Dead Poets Society. And I watched it years and years ago, but what a phenomenal, amazing film to watch with your teenagers, especially they're in an all boys school and my kids are in an all boys school as well. But it's super relevant. One, the dad is very overpowering, does not listen to his son, doesn't give him a choice to act when he wants to act. He feels like he has to do what his dad says. He can't even just explain to him why he wants to do what he wants to do. He has no voice whatsoever. And it ends up being very detrimental for his mental health, and he takes his life. Then there's the teacher, who is Robin Williams, which is amazing. And you see how he handles when somebody acts out and the way he goes about it in a way where that child doesn't feel in trouble, but he's understanding why that child might have done what he did and then dealing with it appropriately. And I think a lot of times teachers don't do that. They don't have the skills to actually, teachers are not typically equipped with behavior, even though we take a behavior management course, which I did in my master's degree. It's not enough to teach you these things. And as a parent, we're not born knowing it.
Right. So more specifically than, like, let's say you get a call from the school and the kid, I don't know, got in a fight at school. Well, what's the best practices for the parent that first meeting with their kid? The kid gets home from school and maybe they got like suspended for a couple of days because of the event. What's good practices when you're looking at your kid that just went through something like that?
Yeah. First and foremost, best practice is don't place judgment when you don't have the whole story. So a lot of times, even if there's a fight at school, there's a fight at home between siblings, we are placing judgment on the situation without actually having all the facts. So there's most of the time, parents or teachers will see the person that hit at the end or the thing that seemed the most, the thing that was the worst in their mind or whatever it was. And they go in and they interject without knowing the whole story. So typically parents will get a phone call home. They're triggered. They don't want that to happen. Of course, we don't want that to happen. And then we're immediately harping on our kids. I can't believe the school called. Why would you do this? You know better. This isn't that. You're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to get them to open up to you. You're not going to get them to feel like they have any sort of say in what went on. And so we want to come into it as a first, you know, rule of thumb, let your child have a voice and get some of the facts. There is going to be two sides of the story. There is going to be a start and finish. And a lot of times the adults haven't seen the whole start and finish. That doesn't mean it's okay to hit. It doesn't mean it's okay to do that. We probably need to focus on, you know, how are we teaching them to break those cycles? But in that moment, we don't want to jump the gun. I remember when I was in high school, I had two friends and I was the child who was on financial aid. I went to a private high school, but I was on financial aid. I cleaned the bleachers and the lockers in the summer so that I could go to school. And I wasn't the one that had the nice car or any of those things. All of my friends had all the things they didn't need for or want for anything. And I was at the mall with two friends who had the means, and they decided that it would be a good idea to steal bras and underwear in the change room. And I was with them, and I knew that you should never steal. You should never do that. I knew that. We didn't have cell phones at the time. I guess I could have taken a quarter and gone to a payphone. But I was in this situation, and we're in the change rooms, and they're putting them all on under their clothes. We happen to be at Nordstrom's, who have very great security, by the way. So we, as in high school, don't know this. And I'm sitting there just sitting. I'm not trying on anything. I'm not changing. I'm just sitting. They're layering on items. And we walk out of the change room. We walk out of the store. And within 2 seconds, three people are grabbing all of us, saying, you need to come back into this room. They sit us down in this room. There's like handcuffs on the chair. I am like panicked. I'm like, what the heck is going on? I was like 16 years old. I didn't take anything. I didn't do anything. I just sat there. Like I was just there. And they called my mom and they said, your daughter's been caught stealing. I had no way to describe anything. And she came into that room and she said, I can't believe this. You know better. I can't believe this. Have I not done anything right? And she just made me feel terrible. And I felt terrible enough already for not walking away from the situation when I should have just walked away. And I didn't get the chance to have a voice. And I think in that moment, I made a lot of great decisions. I didn't partake. I sat there. I chose not to do it. And I think every child deserves to have a voice before we come up with our next steps plan.
Gotcha. Well, I definitely did a lot of stealing when I was little, but it was never bras and underwear. What... Which leads me to another question. See, I mean, are there general differences that you see between the approach a parent is going to have the most success with their kid? Like, I don't want to even say like the best way or the, because I don't think it is like that. But like, I think, for instance, a lot of people will see someone parent their kid differently than they would. And they like pass judgment on the parent as if in a way that's like an attack on their own parenting. It's like watching you parent your kid that way feels like an attack. Like they at least react as if they're being attacked, which is ridiculous. But
that's my sister. Yeah.
Does she know that?
I don't think she knows that, but that's exactly, I know exactly what you mean firsthand.
Which I don't think is a healthy thing. Like, I think that is born out of your own insecurities for whatever reason that you feel attacked when you see someone parent different. Whether you think they're doing something better than you and you're like, oh, they think they're better than me, or if they think they're doing something you think is worse than what you would do. Either way, it's like an attack somehow. But getting back to what I was about to ask, I mean, boys and girls, like, do you feel that there's generally a difference as far as how a parent is going to find a successful strategy? Are they generally different strategies when approaching girls, especially at certain, like at certain ages, it seems like boys and girls really mature differently.
Yeah. So the general parenting strategy, like, I don't want parents to think that if you have a kid who's six, you need to be doing these things. And if you have a kid who's eight, you got to do this. And if it's a boy, you got to do these. And if it's a girl, you got to, I mean, we would drive ourselves crazy. The general idea is that there is a puzzle of strategies and a method. And I teach this inside my coaching program, the Parenting with Purpose method. But there is a method to follow, no matter if you have a one-year-old or a 22-year-old. And they're the pieces and the parenting skills that we have to implement and we have to understand. to get to a place where parenting is easy and calm and our kids are listening and we build that relationship. And then, of course, which is why we have personalized coaching as parents go through the program, depending on the age, the stage, your child, their energy levels, their diagnoses or not, we do need to fine tune and tweak and make things the most effective that we can, which is why coaching is so important. Parenting is not something you just listen to one thing and poof, you figure it out. It's working through all these what if scenarios you're bringing up today. Like what if, because it's not the child hitting at school that day that's the problem. It's what happened before that. What's been going on before that? It's not the my friends who are stealing. It's like, why are they stealing? What's been going on before that? And there's so much to uncover. I developed a tool called the Behavior Needs Roadmap. And this is a simple tool for parents to learn to understand why a behavior happens. And there's three core pillars on the roadmap. There's basic needs, emotional needs, and then there's your child's goals, which we talked about, to please you and push boundaries until they're found, which are directly linked to your skills, which are, do you know how to set, hold boundaries and follow through with discipline and not punishment? And so when you can nail all your kids' basic needs and all their emotional needs of power and attention and your skills and their goals, you have a clear vision on why your child will be acting out, what boxes are unchecked, what variables haven't been dealt with, where are the gaps and the holes so that you can make changes. If we don't go through this process, we're like, why? I don't know. Is it because they need more attention? Is it because they're acting out because they're struggling at school? Is it because of this? It's because of that. And we're scrambling and our kids feel like they're not being supported because they don't know why. They need us to figure out why, which is why I developed that tool. And whether you have boys, girls, toddlers, or we had a child graduate, a mom whose son just graduated from Princeton in our program. So problems don't go away. They just get bigger if we don't resolve them early on.
Gotcha. Well, Tia, I mean, parents have been parenting for a long time before there was like parent coaching. So you say we need coaching, and I'm sure there's got to be benefits to coaching in all kinds of aspects of our life. I mean, I've always felt like you have to get kind of lucky in a way, because in our like school system, there's no place where we learn a lot of this stuff. And it's like, if you don't get lucky with your parents, how do you learn this stuff? Like, do you feel like you got lucky with your parents in regard to how they parented you, or?
You're exactly right when you say our kids learn how to parent from what they're watching, what they're hearing, the systems that are in place. Like that's all we know. I wouldn't say I got lucky because I've done a lot of work in this area. But where I did get lucky is that I had a really authoritarian dad, which means he was the overpowering tiger. That's what we like to call that. The overpowering tiger who you better do what he said because he said so. And if not, you might be fearful of what might happen. So you listened because you were in fear and you did not want to have that repercussion. And then my mom, on the other hand, was super, super permissive. So she would try and make up for the fact that my dad was so strict and pretty much kind of harsh. And so she would try and make up for it. I never liked that my mom, that we could kind of walk all over my mom. And I didn't like that I felt like I was in fear or, you know, I wet the bed and I wouldn't want my dad to hear that I wet the bed. So I try and sneak to my mom's side and not get yelled at. And I didn't like that. And I remembered not liking that. And I've loved kids for as long as I can remember. All I wanted to do was be a mom. I used to take my Cabbage Patch to the movie and change its diaper midway through the movie because it really needed to be changed. And it was always so frustrating for my mom because we were paid for the movie and now we're missing it to change a doll's diaper. But I was very dedicated to working with kids and wanting to help kids. And I was a kindergarten teacher with my master's for a number of years before becoming a parent and becoming certified in positive discipline and developing my program. And I think it's really, really important that we are knowing that we have experiences in our life that lead us to where we are, and we can either accept them and just continue on, or we can say, I want to do better. I want to do better. I don't want to repeat those things. Every parent we work with that yells says, I was yelled at and I said I'd never do it. And here I am. And I go to bed at night and I say, I'm not going to do it. And tomorrow I'm going to be calm. And by 8:05, here I am. And the challenge is you can't just tell yourself you're going to do better and do better. because we can only stay calm for so long if our kids aren't listening. We've got to get them to listen. We've got to do work with all the pieces of the puzzle. It's like saying that I'm going to wake up tomorrow and say I'm going to do my own accounting and taxes. Well, it's not going to happen. I can't just tell myself I'm going to do that. I have no idea how to do that. So we have to learn the skills. So parents who are feeling frustrated, who feel like maybe they were raised in a way that they don't want to repeat, you have choices. You have choices to continue that, or you can say, I want to learn how to do better for my own relationship with my kids, but also because if I don't break the cycle now, my kids won't know any different. This is how they're going to raise my grandkids if they choose to have kids, and the cycle just continues.
Gotcha. Yeah, I remember a big part of my parenting strategy, I think, was born out of, I mean, I hate to say it was kind of fear-based, but it was like my parents split up when I was very little, and it definitely had an impact on me, and a lot of it was negative. But in turn, a lot of beautiful things have, I think, been born out of that experience. But one thing that really stood out, I remember, is like there were things I felt like I needed from my dad that I didn't get. And I was so determined to like, to not do what he did to my kids, which in some ways is great. And in some ways, you know, wasn't so great, but because it is kind of, you know, there is like an insecurity out of there. There is like a fear. It's not just pure love. But as I got older, I realized I became like grateful for the lessons I got from my dad, for him doing the way he did, because it allowed me to learn what was important to me so that I could be, you know, I don't want to say better, but so that I could be my best father to my son. Like, for instance, something that really stood out is I did get in trouble a lot. And I remember, and I probably already had like a little bit of abandonment issues because my dad left when we were little. I mean, he was still around, but he wasn't in the house. And when I got in trouble, I always felt like there was a part of me that felt like I needed him to come towards me. But his natural response that was born out of whatever issues he has when he was little was like, I'm too mad to talk to you about this. So he would go away. He would like push me away when I needed him most. And I fucking hated it. Like inside, emotionally, I think I really hated that fact. And then later, I was really grateful because the flip side of that coin is when my son got in trouble, I would go out of my way to be first in line to hug him and let him know that there's no action or behavior that you could express that could jeopardize or puncture the love I have for you. Like, this is all, it doesn't mean anything to me. And I was able to, like, I don't know if I was good at showing him that, but at least I had the intention of showing him that to, I guess, break that cycle, as you would say.
It's amazing. Yeah. I think it's one of those things where we get so triggered, like your dad, so triggered from his own issues and his own thing, and most likely not wanting you to repeat the cycles and not wanting you to make the same mistakes and his fear of you making the same mistakes he made. And then it comes across in his mind, he's doing it for the right reasons, but it comes across as very detrimental and ends up creating, you know, sometimes some trauma, some abandonment issues, lack of confidence, feeling like the people you, when you need somebody the most, are not going to be there. And can I really trust on these things? And it wasn't his intent. And every parent that's listening is doing things for the right reasons in their mind. They're trying to do the right thing. It's just, we often don't realize the consequences of the behaviors that we, you know, portray. One of the things that parents deal with a lot are outbursts. And they'll say to me all the time, well, my child's having tantrums every day, or my child's always having meltdowns. And they use these terms interchangeably. And unfortunately, they're two separate behaviors that require two separate systems to avoid them next time and two separate ways to deal with them. And the reason I bring this up is because when a child's truly having a meltdown, which, you know, the symptom looks like a tantrum, crying, screaming, stomping their feet, you know, a teenager saying, I hate you, you're the worst dad or mom ever, and slamming their door, it can look exactly the same as a tantrum. But if a child's having a meltdown, they're physically and emotionally overwhelmed and they're overflowing. So it's like a pitcher of water that you fill and you keep filling it, and it's just overflowing and overflowing, and they just can't take it anymore. And if in that moment you don't know as a parent that it's a meltdown versus a tantrum, and you decide to walk away from your child, knock it off, stop crying like that, that's ridiculous, and you walk away, you are creating that same feeling that you had as a child when you got in trouble, because you need somebody in that moment when you're having an actual meltdown, when you're overwhelmed and you aren't able to manage emotionally or physically. And when we feel that sense that our parents can't handle our emotions as a child, our parents aren't okay with our emotions, it's not right to have these feelings, that's where we start to learn, hey, I just shouldn't say anything. I shouldn't do anything. I shouldn't talk about my feelings. My feelings aren't okay. And people bottle and bottle and bottle. And then we see today more than ever, mental health issues and people who can't talk about their feelings. And that's the cycle like I really want to break. And my goal in what I do is, can we help everybody's overall well-being and mental health and relationships and who they are by changing the way parents show up?
That sounds like a good idea.
Okay. I'll keep doing it.
I have another question, and this is a little, I mean, it's on subject, but a little sidetracked. And it's just something that I think about over the years that I don't see discussed. And again, one of those, I don't think there's a perfect answer. There's just like, you know, people are going to have different opinions about it, but I'm interested in yours. Like when my ancestors came to this country, they were poor, like very poor. And then every generation got like a little less poor. And then current generations, you know, we've worked our ass off building businesses and we're less poor. And I would argue that in many ways, kind of very rich feeling, not like rich that what many people would think of as rich financially, but feel very rich. Like we could go on vacation if we want. And something that I haven't been able to really nail down what I would consider the best way to approach what I consider like a catch 22 between you want your kids to be better off than you. Like every generation wants them to be better off. Like I want you to like build from my shoulders and not have to go through every freaking mistake I did. Like that doesn't make sense. But where is the line between helping them do that and like spoiling them where they lose motivation or ambition? Like, I want my kid to feel the freedom to do the thing he loves to do and not take, let's say, a job that he hates because he feels like it pays better. I want him to reap some of the benefits of the generations of hard work, but I don't want him to get lazy and spoiled. And like, do you ever work with parents? Like, how do you balance like the financial support, if you will? And like, I know I have a sibling that has a different opinion, and like they'll put money aside for the kid, but not tell the kid because they don't want it to like screw him up. And I honestly, I'll admit it. Like I have told my kid what I put aside. Like I want them to have a mental safety net in some way, because I do think things are hard for kids. Like it's really hard to like make it. Like inflation's been eating us for a long time, and like in some ways it's easier than ever to make it now, but in some ways it's also harder than it has been in recent times. Are those conversations you ever have with your parents? You have an opinion about like how to approach that balance?
All the time. So I think even in our own home with our own two boys who go to a private school and have, you know, surrounded by lots, and they're very fortunate boys, which is great. But this idea in our kids, in our minds, that we want our kids to always do better starts to create a lot of pressure. It can become like a pressure cooker of, hey, I've got to at least accomplish what my parents accomplished, or I can't live my life I'm used to. I can't do the things I normally do. I can't have the things I normally have. And there is a balance of trying to figure out, like, you know, what do we do and give and experience with our kids that's great because we can, without making them feel like they have to repeat what's been done, and or making them feel like we're disappointed if they don't reach that goal. Because I'm with you, my kids should do what makes them feel so excited. And I show up every day because this is just a passion project. Like I love it. Love it. I'm fortunate that I don't have to work. I stayed at home for a number of years and I just created this from nothing. And it's, I love it. I'm totally inspired by it all the time. And that doesn't feel like work. And I think that's what we have to remember. We don't want to interject so much on our kids that they have this idea of what we think they should accomplish. We want to help them learn what they feel good about. And a lot of the times it starts with young kids, where my general rule of thumb for parents always, and we work a lot in the program on this, is remind yourself, don't do things for your kids that they can do either on their own or almost on their own. We need to give our kids a chance to do the things that they can do, because things like making their lunch, unpacking their backpack, doing their own laundry are things that actually build confidence and self-esteem. If we just cater and cater and cater and give and give and give, we're actually robbing our kids the opportunity to build that capability and that confidence and that self-esteem. So I think those are things to focus on, like in the daily. Don't do things for your kids that they can do or almost do. Really look at what you're doing for them. You're going to have a whole long list and be like, oh, shoot, I do that, I do that, I do that, I do that, because it's easier and it's faster and it's cleaner and it's this and it's that. But give your kids those opportunities. And then as a bigger picture, really ask yourself, am I putting a lot of pressure on my kids to accomplish, or am I supporting them? And whether you tell your kids that you put money aside or your sibling doesn't, everybody's got to kind of pick what makes sense for them. But I think if your child has a lot of anxiety, then you might want them to know, like, hey, we're going to work together. Here's like your end of the bargain and here's my end of the bargain. And as long as we're both, you know, working as a team, we're here to support you. Like, it's okay for our kids to know that. You're right. We don't want to give them so much that they don't work and they're lazy and they don't think they need to work, because that's not going to help them live a fulfilled life.
All right. Yeah, it's a weird question. Again, it's not something that I really hear discussed. I've heard like some strong opinions, but like anytime an opinion is really strong on one side, I'm like, yeah, I don't buy that. I just don't think there's I don't think it's so clean. And there might be a lot of individual variability of, you could have two kids respond to the same tactic very differently because their brains are so different.
Yep. And you might have one child who's super, super driven and is doing all of these things. And you might have one that needs a little more support to be driven. And you might have to, you know, deal with, you know, what's being passed down to them one way with one child and one way with another, just for the own health and safety of each child, to make sure we don't hold somebody back or set somebody behind. So I think it's important to look at it. It isn't a cut and dry, like, you should just do this and just do this and just do this. I really think it's based on everybody's family, what feels good to them. But if your kids are becoming very lazy, you're doing everything for them, you're buying them everything they want all the time, they don't have any responsibilities or chores, they don't help out, there's no motivation or drive, there's a bigger issue that we want to focus on.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I usually don't talk about personal finance stuff, but you know, when they were little, I started just putting like a little bit, like it was like $50 a month, and it, but it like grew.
It's
and I remember telling them, like, this is yours when you're of age. It's some kind of like custodial account that I guess when they get of age, it like switches to their name or something. But I was like, don't pay your bills with this. Like, this is to put a down payment on a house. This is to start a business. This is to take time off and travel the world. Like, do something cool, whatever it is, you know? And the surprising, now they're old enough to have it, none of them want to touch it.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like, I think they feel like they didn't deserve it. Like, they didn't earn it. And I'm like, that's interesting.
Interesting.
But they knew about it. So they're still like working at doing stuff for themselves and trying to save on their own, but they don't want to touch it. It's interesting. I don't know exactly how to think about, I can't read their minds, but as an observer of the process, it's interesting.
I wonder if they're waiting for the most cool, exciting thing to use it for. And they're afraid if they use it now, something cooler might come along. And so they're going to just wait it out till they really know. And there's probably a little bit of that going on.
Yeah. I mean, I told him at one point, I was like, I just hope you don't do something reckless with it. Like, go to the casino, put it all in black.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do, it'll be your lesson to learn. It'll be your guilt. It'll be your...
It will be. Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, I appreciate your insights on that. I'm sure there's a lot more that we could go over because parenting is so complex in general, but I know you have a hard stop today. I want people to be able to understand a little bit more about what your offerings are and where to go to get them. So you said you have a Parenting with Purpose method. Is that a course? Is that a program? What is that like?
Yeah, that's our online coaching program. Again, we work with parents from around the world. It's all virtual. We have various levels to meet the needs of parents and what they need to solve their challenges and what makes sense for them from an investment standpoint. We do our very best to help as many parents as we possibly can. And that's going to be the place where we're going to work through all the pieces of the puzzle to make sure you understand the why behind behavior. You get your kids to listen, you break the punishment cycles, and you really build that bond and connection that you desire to have with your kids. So, you know, you can find information on that on my website at tslightham.com. But I did also put together a free parenting bundle for all of your listeners today. So any parents who are listening, if they want to just head to my Instagram, which is Tia, T-I-A, Parenting Coach, and they DM us the word wellness, then I'm going to make sure that we will send them that parenting bundle. And that bundle is going to have a free download that they can instantly access, which is going to help them build their bond and connection, whether you have teens or toddlers. It only takes 10 minutes a day. If you are struggling to really get on a positive track with your kids, you need to do this. It is a special tool with 5 ingredients and it works every time. And then along with that, we're going to offer an opportunity to hop on a free call with our team to talk about your challenges and really do a breakthrough on where you're struggling, what's been going on, what are the things you want to change, and talk through some of those things and give you a 90-day plan so we can figure out what makes the most sense.
And is that all done in the absence of the child?
Always. Yeah. So parents will say to me, if you could just come move in with me, Tia, we just move in. I said, I could come over and your kids will be angels for me. But my goal isn't for them to be an angel for me. It's for them to be an angel for you. And that comes from empowering the parents, because every parent is it is possible for every parent to achieve this. Everything is fixable. It's just whether or not you want to commit to learning how to do it. And if you do, then you already have your goals reached. It happens every time.
Gotcha. Well, Tia, I appreciate you providing your insights today and offering your time. And for the listeners, I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Always grateful for your listening, and I hope you have a great day.
Thank you so much.